Fiddlesmeta Summer School, 1976. The 11 o'clock talk given on Sunday morning, the 20th of June, 1976, is on the Zodiac.
We all know that the universe functions as a whole, continuously. Everything is interdependent with and interacts with everything else. We, being constituted as we are aware of the universal process to a very, very limited extent. Our unawareness does not prevent, of course, all the forces of the universe affecting us. Now, our particular galaxy has this Milky Way, and we are all acquainted with the zodiac representing the regions, the constellations through which the sun moves.
Excuse me interrupting, but are you not recording?
No. Yourself? I'm not recording what you mean.
All right, well, you did offer
to thank you. In olden days, they had the signs of the zodiac, which we today talk of as astrology. In all likelihood, it arose somewhere in the regions which were called Chaldea, and maybe extending right to Egypt. The energy flow, what we commonly call the influence of the stars and so forth, the energy flow from all that exists as such plays its part in determining our particular individual patterns, psychophysical patterns, and also the main ways in which our inner consciousness will function, the main qualities, especially those which we call the spiritual values, the transcendent qualities, could function through us, and which we could represent and bring out very fully in our own life experience. For instance, to take the great example, the Buddha is called the Lord of Compassion and Wisdom. Jesus was called the Prince of Peace, the Lord of Love. So you see, great archetypal concepts like that find their finest expressions in those individuals in whom they come to full fruition. Our own potentiality is indicated in what we commonly call our own horoscope. The horoscope is a mandala. It is a pattern. Now, fundamentally, that pattern is concerned with the possibilities that lie in each of us in connection with our main modes of awareness of reality. The horoscope tells you what are your possibilities, what is your potentiality in the deepest levels of consciousness. That is the first indication and the foremost indication. And I don't think that that has ever been made explicit. I cannot help but feel convinced that the ancients did understand and know about this. But it hasn't, as far as I'm aware, come down in the writings available to us today. Now, I propose to just run through the signs of the zodiac. You know your own birthdays. Do you know the signs under which all of you are? Anyone doesn't know? Now, do remember, this concerns only the sign in which the sun is placed. And the horoscope as such gives you not only the sign of the sun, but the signs in which the other planets are placed, and also the houses, as they are called, in which the signs and planets are placed. You will see that if you try to work out the permutations and combinations of the possibilities with 12 signs, 12 houses, and now 9 planets, in the old days they dealt with just 7 planets, or I should say 10 planets including Pluto, and if some other planets are discovered, goodness knows what will be added on. You'll see the immense variety, the unending variety that becomes possible. The number of permutations would run into thousands of millions. With 12 signs, 12 houses, so many planets, and all the rest of it. But we can only confine ourselves to the sign of the sun. And the sun is important this way, that the sun indicates your basic individuality. It expresses you, your withinness, interacting with the without. The moon generally indicates more the without acting upon you, the within. The sun is your individuality, your essential potentiality. So now, the first sign, Aries, March, April, deals with force, creation, recreation, or resurrection. Aries is pure energy, unconstrained energy. The Aleph, the first letter, and the number one of the Kabbalistic symbology. Aleph. Pure creation. Pure energy. Taurus represents security, form making, the container of this primordial creative energy. And remember that the primordial creative upsurge brings into being its own creator. Its own container. This is one of the very interesting aspects. It's the same with the great conceptions that people have, the geniuses have, or ordinary people like yourselves. Some of you may be geniuses, of course, so you would know for a certainty that this is true. When this creative energy suddenly sort of bursts forth into consciousness, it constricts itself in the bursting forth. And in the constricting itself, it produces a form, a manifestation of itself. By self-constriction, the utterly free, formless, shapeless, unlimited primordial energy produces its container, its limitation, its manifestation. So Taurus represents that sort of activity in terms of the deepest depths of consciousness. It's security in the grand sense. As far as manifestation, earthly manifestation, planets and sun and all that is concerned, it is manifested as gravitation. That which holds together what has come into being as a cosmos, not as a disorder, as an order. So Taurus stands for that. Hence Taurus stands for establishment and so forth. Aries is a fire sign, the fire of creation. And Taurus is an earth sign, container, a form. Gemini, May, June, we have movement and we have intelligence. Geminian people, for instance, if they are concerned with subjects like mathematics, they turn out great geniuses. And you will find that quite often men of genius and women of genius are born on the, just on the changeover from Taurus to Gemini. Wagner is an example, 22nd of May, you see. Intelligence. Cancer stands for organic life. Organic life and the emergence of self-consciousness, which we associate with living creatures. We don't associate consciousness ordinarily with what we are pleased to call the inanimate world, but which is not inanimate. It has life, but not consciousness in our sense. The emergence of discriminative consciousness, because it is first and foremost the consciousness of oneself. I am I. This consciousness emerges. You see. And when this consciousness becomes clear and strong, and the affirmation of selfhood is made, you get in Leo individuality. And you know, Leo can be a very assertive sign. The lion is the so-called king of the beasts, although he can be very sloppy and lazy and so on. And it represents incarnation. The self-assertion is associated with the incarnation of transcendence. The awakening to transcendence can begin in Leo. That doesn't mean that those of you who are born in the other signs do not awaken to transcendence. But this is generally speaking on the cosmic scale. Now is posed the great question, the great riddle. Well, my man, you know you are transcendence incarnate. What are you going to do with it? Because now you are self-responsible. You can say no, you can say yes to the process of your fruition, to the process of your awakening. What are you going to do with this affirmation of self-responsible selfhood? Virgo, which is a feminine sign, deals with specialization and with discrimination. These are fundamental keynotes of the various signs. Specialization. The ordinary crafts and skills, not only in the artistic field as such, but in everyday life, in the domestic field and so forth. Virtues like prudence, chastity, temperance and so forth, they all come under Virgo. Virgo is the sign which represents the path of Athene, the goddess of wisdom, you see? And the goddess of wisdom puts before us this fact: live in tune with the laws of nature, where everyday life is concerned, eating, drinking, exercise, play, work, industry, and all these qualities, you see. Or you can follow the path of Circe if you won't follow the path of Athene. The path of Circe, the enchantress, captivated by pleasure and sensation, you can indulge yourself. And when self-indulgence goes beyond its a certain elastic limit, you seek palliatives, you seek magical means to counter the ill effects which you are bound to experience through disobeying the laws of nature, through not following the path of Athene. Poisons and drugs and narcotics and all those things come under the path of Circe. And remember what Circe the enchantress does, and this is the price we pay for self-indulgence, pleasure lust gone mad. Circe touches the person and he's turned into swine, into a swine. You see? It's very interesting. But in Virgo, we learn that lesson. We have to learn that lesson. So Virgo stands for specialization and discrimination. We come to the next sign, Libra, which stands for equilibrium. But remember that the equilibrium of Libra tends to be a precarious equilibrium. It is of the seesaw type. You see? It's the horizontal beam which is balanced on a fulcrum. And of course, it's always up and down, always moving, and the task is to keep steady. Libra stands for love. Love in its aspect of romantic love at its most idealistic. That's what Libra stands for. Taurus also stands for love, but love in its natural form, the good animal expressing love in relationship with another good animal. That belongs to Taurus. But Taurus has this aspect too, that the senses are very powerfully active in Taurus and extrovert all the time. Taurus can see and hear and enjoy the beauty and the loveliness and so forth. Par excellence. In Libra, that same enjoyment, that same delight and appreciation of beauty is in terms of the most sensitive, refined, aesthetic nature. It is tied up with the intellectual perception of beauty which has reached its culminating point. So there is more of an inwardness in Libra's appreciation of beauty than in Taurus's appreciation of beauty. Do remember, these are generalizations. Always you have the variations through the influence of all the other signs. A Taurian may have strong Libran influences also, and a Libran may have strong Taurian influences also, and so on and so on. So you have to bear all that in mind. Libra also stands for culture and the ideal of happiness. Libra is always dreaming wonderful dreams of happiness and generally comes a cropper because he lives in a world of his own creation, which is an illusory world after all, when unrelated to the actual what is, Libra tends to shrink away from the actual what is. He wants something, oh, so beautiful, so perfect, so aesthetic, just like that, you see, that he comes a cropper in that way. But Libra is super sensitive. And Libra has a tendency to want to bring about harmony all the time, everywhere. Libra is more capable than any other sign of living in a fool's paradise. Also, Libra stands for justice. Justice, which is imbued with love. It is not the sort of stern justice of the Lord who hurls his thunderbolt. But all those aspects come under Libra. Libra with the ancients in Chaldea, for instance, during those times, is associated with Hermes, with Enoch, and Libra is associated in the Kabbalistic tree of life as presented in the shape of a man with the sixth Sephira, corresponding to the heart center in Kundalini Yoga, is associated with the idea of the son of man who becomes the son of God when perfection is realized. Libra's capacity for transcendent vision, not so much as realized vision, but as seen in the heavens, not yet brought right down to earth, is perhaps strongest in Libra as a sign, just by itself. Now, I said Libra is associated with living in a fool's paradise. The next sign, Scorpio, cures that. Scorpio produces all the disturbance and upheaval. The most tremendous dynamic sign, Scorpio is. And says, oh, away with all this illusory nonsense. This is the fact, now deal with it, here we are. You see? Scorpio is associated in the body with the genitals. Aries, the head. Taurus, the neck. Gemini, the shoulders and arms. Cancer, the breast. The chest, lungs, and so forth. And any of the diseases, etc., associated with these, very frequently can be seen in the horoscope, indicated in the horoscope, where the person is likely, what is going to be the weak point in that person's body, according to his signs, you see. Leo with the heart, Virgo with the tummy generally, actually belly, one should say, not stomach. All that region is Virgo. And it's very, very interesting in this connection. You know how it is said in Genesis, Virgo, the woman, Virgo transcendentally represents Vina, the mother principle, the divine mother, the divine woman. The woman is made from Adam's rib. And the sign of Virgo, which deals with the belly, also deals with the lower ribs. Quite fascinating how all these things are interwoven. Now, Scorpio deals with power, energy. Energy tending to run wild. And, of course, it deals with sex. Now, do understand this carefully. I remember some years back at the Buddhist summer school, several people got frightfully upset when I spoke about these things. Don't restrict the word sex to just biological sexuality. This is a great error. Remember that all this science of the zodiac deals with the activity of cosmic forces. And the cosmic forces, like the physical energies that science knows of, like electricity and so forth, you see, it's the interplay of positive and negative charges of electricity. It's the interplay between all that is classed under the word positive on the one hand and the word negative on the other hand. On the word male, on the word female. Man, woman. There is this continuous interplay. You see? So in that sense, sex in the total sense, the whole cosmos expresses and exercises a sexual influence in that sense. If you look at the cosmos with an organic eye, well then you will talk in terms of male, female and sex and so forth. If you look at it with a scientific eye, an objective, dispassionate, at a distance eye, you will talk in terms of positive and negative forces. So, it deals with power in that way. And one of the main purposes of Scorpio is to break up whatever tends to fossilize. Whether it be, and especially with Libra, has this sort of rather ethereal, gentle side. Likes everything to, once it's produced a nice situation, let's have it like this, all little beautiful, everything is in its proper place and everything is comfortable and pleasant. And Scorpio says, no, my God, that won't do. You have to grow. You can't stick in the mud of pleasantness. So Scorpio has that influence. But Scorpio thereby is the agent of regeneration. Not only of reproduction, but of regeneration. And Scorpio has the strongest recuperative powers of all the signs of the horoscope. You know, fellow is at death's door and the doctor says, my dear fellow, you ought to have been dead 5 minutes ago, but you have only another 6 months to go on at best. And he doesn't go on for 6 months, he survives the doctor. Now, the next sign, Sagittarius, November, December, the archer. He shoots his arrow, he aims his arrow at the heart of transcendent truth. That is his aspiration. Sagittarius stands for revelation, for the ideal of truth and right. It's a tremendous sign in its significances. To use another symbolical phrase, it stands for the sun shining in the unclouded heavens. That's Sagittarius. Sagittarius has immense power, generally physical power. Strength is very great in Sagittarians as well as in Capricornians, the next sign. Sagittarius too has terrific recuperative powers, psychophysically, in all ways. Sagittarius is very magnanimous, great-minded, great-hearted, powerful, by nature inclined to rulership. The next sign, Capricorn, is associated with organization, authority, and with capital resources. Remember that cosmically, Capricorn represents the end of that particular cycle of universal evolution. as far as our solar system is concerned, and our solar system is as much as we can grapple with, deal with, or try to understand, it represents the end of the particular cycle of development as far as the solar system is concerned. When the precession of the equinox, you know, the precession of the equinoxes, which takes place because the Earth in its revolution around the Sun does this trip. The axis of the Earth makes this kind of movement once in 26,000 years, roughly. It undergoes one continuous circle like that. And in Capricorn, generally, there is the ending of it. Some of you may sometimes wonder why I keep on saying, watch 1986, 1987 onwards, till about 1990. Several of the large planets, the distant planets, are all together in Capricorn. In the ancient teaching, the great cataclysm on the earth took place when they were foregathered in Cancer, a water sign, the flood of Genesis. And the flood is a thing which you will find in all cultures. All cultures talk of this universal flood. The primitive cultures as well as the so-called non-primitive cultures. We all talk of a flood that is associated with this conglomeration of planets in Cancer. And the conglomeration in Capricorn. Now, it's easier to understand the flood associated with Cancer. Cancer has always been regarded as the water sign, because organic life begins in a liquid medium. See? But Capricorn is an earth sign. And the teaching is that the sort of dissolution and destruction, the cataclysm, will take place by fire. I don't know how to explain this. I don't know. However, that's that. It represents organization. After organization as determined by Capricorn, all that is broken down. In a minor form, consider how after the last war, the buildings that have come up, all the old buildings are being broken down, excepting those which you just must not break down and cannot break down. But the clearance of slums and the clearance of this and the clearance of the other and all the new building activities and so on which take place, they are the Capricornian touch upon the course of life. And this is happening everywhere, not only in one or two countries, has happened and is happening. Organization, authority, and capital resources. A Capricornian may be very poor in the ordinary sense, financially, has no wealth, as we call it, financially, but strangely enough you will find that the tendency for the Capricornian, won't happen every time, but the tendency for the Capricornian is to get put in charge of the utilization of resources. Look at it that way. You see? The resources may belong to somebody else altogether. But that somebody else will tend to put the management of his estate or resources into the hands of the Capricornian. The Capricornian is asked to take charge of this, that, and the other. And the Capricornian does things and functions in an authoritative manner. It's very interesting how these things happen. Aquarius represents cooperation and civilization. Civilization in our ordinary sense of materially as well as culturally reaches its peak point in Aquarius. Now Aquarius is the sign in which everything in the way of big institutions, activities on a large scale, a cooperative scale, come into being. Look at the big combines, for instance, which we have in business and so forth, is an Aquarian sort of influence. The synthesizing of so many lines of development, joining them up together, relating them up together and so forth. This is Aquarius at work. Everything in terms of large societies, the small man, the small shop is pushed out, you see. And is compelled to be swallowed up in the large concern. This sort of thing happens. We have entered the Aquarian age in this century. We started entering it. Look, for instance, at the way that the communist countries has sprung into being and the way they function. This is one of the signs of Aquarius. Everything under one great concern with a dominant authority at the top. You will find that those who have both Capricorn and Aquarius powerful in their horoscopes are the people who control big business. Generally they have the two together. And especially if they have signs like Leo also, they sort of naturally slip into leadership. But there is this, that the emphasis on cooperation, the recognition that we are interdependent, that we do interact with each other, comes out very strongly in Aquarius. A big orchestra, for instance, is a magnificent example of the Aquarian quality, the Aquarian influence at play. Everybody is contributing faultlessly to produce one love, one perfect harmony, the music. That's an Aquarian quality expressed. And then we come to Pisces, which is a very, very wonderful sign, really. It represents commingling and dissolution. All separate, specific expressions begin to disappear. There is a diffusion of things. Clear outlines vanish. At the spiritual level, it is the sign of supreme self-sacrifice. Sacrifice in its true meaning of made sacred, through being made one whole, with no obtrusion by the separate entity or the separate self. It is the sign of transcendental love. It is the sign of mercy to the nth degree. If there is mercy to the nth degree, the maintenance of a specific laid down order cannot go on. It dissolves because of excess of mercy. It is not balanced by judgment, by discriminative perception, and by the consequences of judgment for what is wrong or evil. Mercy which forgives anything and everything. In the crucifixion, the last, amongst the last words, Father, forgive them, not never I forgive. You see, no self-obtrusiveness at all. Father, forgive them, they know not what they do. See, this is characteristic of Pisces. Pisces by itself. Do remember, now don't think of yourselves or all your friends who have birthdays in Pisces and are nothing like this. Well, of course, there'll be nothing like this. You see? But these are the deep things in inner consciousness which are possible for each and every one. Again, Pisces represents the love that unites all manifest life. This universal energy, this universal life power, life force, is the thing that keeps all things alive, is the power that keeps all things alive. I live, you live, by virtue of this functioning of energy. And this type of functioning of energy is love in its transcendent reality. You see how there is no sentimentality or emotionalism involved in it. There is deep emotion, deep feeling, and all that involved in it, but no slushy emotionalism about it. Now, this, of course, is the very thing you'll notice in the Piscarian, more than in most other people, because every sign contains within itself its opposite also. You see? All these signs of the zodiac function in the dual universe, the multiple universe. Therefore, it can be this, it can be the other. Those of us who are concerned with setting our sights on transcendence and with trying to discover what is our specific task and the way we have specifically to manifest this fruition, can get some sort of help through understanding the horoscope as such. Now do remember, you've got to take into account all the other planets and all the other signs. Whether you have planets in a sign or not doesn't prevent the sign from operating, because the total cosmos is what we live in. We don't live just in Sagittarius or in Aries or anything like that. We live in the whole universe. This wholeness is the keynote and most important thing to bear in mind. Finally, Pisces is concerned with death. Death as the portal to recreation in Aries. It is death, the perfecter, the consummator. This is Pisces. The bringer to fruition, which you and I in the ordinary way cannot know, cannot see. It is the fruition at the transcendent, in the transcendent depths. The cosmic purpose, if fulfilled through you, is represented by death, the other life in Pisces. Now, each of these signs is controlled, has what are called its rulers. And the main rulers are the first seven planets: Mercury, Venus, Mars, the Moon, Sun, Jupiter, and Saturn. Not Uranus, Neptune, in the old teaching. Remember that the esoteric aspect you will find in the old teachings if you can ferret them out. You see, Uranus and Neptune are new boys on our little cosmic scene. Now, the sun stands for vitality, constitution, health. It stands for all that is natural to you. You're born like that. And it stands for the unconscious action taken by you. It is you, you just naturally function that way. See, unconscious action by you is represented by the sun. And the sun in the horoscopes of women represent the men in their life. Father, brother, friend, lover, husband, teacher, and so on and so on. The men. The moon represents consciousness. The moon represents the psychical depths, this inner mind, which is specifically you. It represents the psyche, represents experience. Just the sun represents action, positive action. The moon represents experience. It also represents understanding, the receptive and the digestive side of the mind. It is a more important mental factor than Mercury. Mercury deals with the superficial activities of the mind, the surface activities. I don't mean superficial in the derogatory sense, not worth much, not that far from it. But it represents the surface activities of the mind. That aspect of mental activity which is shown forth, which is made manifest. And the moon represents the women in your life. It represents the proletariat. And it denotes the changeable element in man. The tendency to be affected by circumstances. Now the sun rules Leo, sign of individuality. The moon rules Cancer, organic life and the uprising of consciousness, self-awareness. see, the moon is quiet and contemplative. The birth of the Buddha, the enlightenment of the Buddha, the death of the Buddha is said to take place at the full moon. I doubt very much whether factually it happened like that. The enlightenment, probably yes, definitely yes. I'm quite prepared to it, but I'm not so sure whether birth and death also, they may have been coincidences. But the moon is quiet and contemplative. And it is contemplative in that sense, that is to say, when it realizes its fullness, as in as a state of enlightenment, or when the Sahasrara chakra is fully active, it represents that when all self-consciousness is absent. Any intrusive self-consciousness is absent. Then wisdom flows into you. And it is always represented, well, I don't know about always, but certainly strongly represented in India in terms of the full moon, the shining of the full moon. Mercury stands for nervous health. Mercury is the messenger of the gods, the communicator, physically right throughout the body in terms of the nervous system and its activity. So Mercury stands for that. It also indicates disposition, agility, physical dexterity and technique, particularly the technique of hands and fingers. The skill of hands and fingers is represented by Mercury. Mercury governs Virgo and Gemini. Skill with the mind, mathematics for example, I mentioned mathematics earlier in connection with Gemini. Skill with the mind is mercurial. Very sharp, bright mind, you know, just penetrates here and there very quickly, gets to the point, knows all about it, like that. That's the activity of Mercury. If, for example, you have a Mercury in good aspect to Moon, you can have Mercury in good aspect to Sun when Mercury is just 30 degrees away from the Sun. Mercury can never be more than 36 degrees away from the Sun. So that's the only good aspect you can have. When that is the case, in the things which touch your ordinary physical, cultural life, your mental activities in terms of the arts and the sciences and so on, and especially where fine critical analysis is concerned, this is where Mercury plays its part. Now, if Mercury is in good aspect to a planet like Neptune, you get some of the supreme penetrations into mystical reality, mysticism. It is concerned with writing and speech. He who writes well, who speaks well, has Mercury strong in the horoscope. It deals with communication, with Mercury is a coordinator. If Mercury is in bad aspect, he goes and makes a mess of things, sets this party against the other party, and so forth and so forth. He's a naughty boy. If you read your Greek mythology, carefully, you'll see the number of times he was a naughty boy. Remember how he was a thief in connection with Apollo and so forth, and all the trouble he caused thereby. He's a rogue. And the roguish lesser aspect of Mercury shows itself particularly in cunning. He's a very cunning fellow, this Mercury. Deals with commerce. Education, study, and memory of written records. Good memory, Mercury, well-placed Mercury has. Oratory. Mercury is very associative. So let's go here, hello, what are you doing, and how are you getting on, and finds out all about you, and goes into meetings, and this, that, and the other, and there you are, immediately becomes somebody, communicates this, joins people up, brings people together, and so forth. All that is mercurial. Mercury is a neutral planet, as it is called, and it is hermaphroditic. Masculine, feminine together. Positive, negative together. And Mercury has a very enlivening influence. Mercury can be extremely cheerful, lots of laughter, fun, and play. Having fun is one of Mercury's strong qualities. All the lads and lasses at school who are first class footballers, cricketers, swimmers, athletes have strong Mercury influence in their household. Now, Venus rules Libra and Taurus. You notice how the rulership moves out on either side of the Sun ruling Leo. Then you get Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn as rulers, Moon ruling Cancer, and going out on the other arc, Pisces, Saturn ruling Aquarius, Saturn ruling Capricorn, Jupiter ruling Aquarius. So, Venus rules Taurus and Libra. Harmony is the keynote. Harmony between environment and self. Harmony with environment because of affinity with the environment. And harmony within the self because that person is well balanced inside him, inside himself. Venus stands for happiness. Happiness not in terms of self-indulgence. Venus ruling Libra is Venus in its, to you, for lack of a better word, in its higher aspect, its more sensitive aesthetic aspect as compared with Taurus. Taurus will eat, drink, be merry, be a very jolly fellow, you know, and so forth. Venus, in terms of the enjoyment of the pleasure principle as functioning in Libra, is an aesthete. Is an aesthete, you see. Nothing crude or anything like that. It has to be refined, very, very, oh, so refined. And Venus in Libra definitely stands for grace and beauty. Taurus has a kind of a irresistible, matter-of-fact, down-to-earth attractiveness. And Libra has it in its delicate sense, grace, beauty, and so forth. Venus represents your choice, the kind of experience you would like. The moon represents your affinity, that which naturally gravitates to you. That's the difference between the activity of Venus and moon. They are both feminine signs. Diana, the moon. You see? So moon represents that which naturally gravitates to you, and Venus represents your choice. If you have Venus and moon in good aspect to each other, or if they are together in conjunction and are well aspected by a benefic, say like Jupiter, then both your choice and that which gravitates to you all come along, you see. Those are the people who are the sort of unbelievably fortunate people all the way through. Now, Mars, as controlling Aries, represents the perception of objects and things. Moon, as controlling Taurus, ruler of Taurus, represents understanding and impression. Understanding not in the transcendent sense, but in the matter-of-fact sense in the everyday life. Mercury, ruling Gemini, intelligence, I have already said, relating and discussing what you perceive and the impressions you obtain. That's what Mercury, as ruler of Gemini, does. And now, when Venus is in Cancer, and Venus is part ruler of Cancer, you do remember that in addition to the main rulers, other planets are part rulers of signs. For instance, Jupiter is part ruler with Sun in Leo. Yes. Mars, now. Mars by himself. Mars is the planet of action par excellence. He's the doer. He wants to get things done. He's matter of fact. Mars represents taking the upper hand, enthusiasm, sets up contest and antagonism in order to win out. Mars is the god of war, as we ordinarily say. He fights for things. Accidents and injuries are Martian expressions. Mars is also very industrious, brave, active, vigorous, assertive, impatient, willful, short-sighted, clear-cut, accurate. Mars rules Aries and Scorpio. Strength and a very good muscular system. A well-placed Mars, for example, if you have an aspect like this, Mars in Leo, in good aspect to Uranus in Sagittarius, trine aspect, you have something very wonderful. Capable of insights and inspirations which are really very original, very inventive. You'll find this Mars, Uranus, and if Mars and Uranus are in bad aspect, pray to God. Can be terribly destructive, especially if they are in bad aspect in fire signs. Explosion, getting blown up, and all those things. Mars in bad aspect to Uranus. And mind you, this happens not merely in the outer life, but in your inner life too. Mars is not refined. He doesn't waste time on courtship. And so you know why dear old Hephaestus, the lame artificer of the universe, got, because Aphrodite was Mrs. Hephaestus. And Mars came along, and this lame Hephaestus, you know, would easily be forgotten. And so Hephaestus made this wonderful net in which he caught them in the act. And then evidence before Zeus and company in Olympus. And lo and behold, all the gods laughed heartily. How like the gods. So Mars is not refined, tends to coarsen his sign or house, adds stone to everything, plenty of vitality, real good physical energy, brings discussion, dissension and discord, upsets equilibrium, not unstable in himself. So funny thing. But he produces instability elsewhere. He has great fun making a mess of things. You see, looking at other people's mess. Till Eulenspiegel. But remember what happened to Till Eulenspiegel. Unlike Mercury, Mars is unlike Mercury. Well placed in Aries, Scorpio, Taurus, and Capricorn. If you have Mars in Aries, Leo, Scorpio, Capricorn. Did I say Taurus? I'm sorry, that's a mistake. It's in Leo. In Aries, Leo, Scorpio, and Capricorn. It's well placed. Now, we are getting rather close to lunchtime. Have you had enough, or shall I finish with Jupiter and Saturn? That finishes the lot. Jupiter is the ruler of Sagittarius and of Pisces, that's it. Saturn is the ruler of Capricorn and Aquarius. Jupiter rules Sagittarius and Pisces. Jupiter is the great benefic. Concerned for all. Fair play. Was it yesterday that I said he holds up the scales, or was it today I said it? He holds up the scales, wants fair play, right judgment, and then the consequence. Fair play, mutual benefit. Assurance companies, for example, or a Jupiterian expression. Mutual benefit. Stands for institutions. Jupiter is the great institutionalizer. Politics and government concerned with Jupiter. Jupiter is supposed to be the ruling planet of England. A good homemaker, fertility, stability, recuperative power, benevolent, the most benevolent planet, kindly, tolerant, harmonizing, promotes health and well-being, constructive, wholesome, and preserving, arouses warmth and affection. Jovial fellow, you know, one takes to him, oh, he's a jolly good fellow, and one goes for him. His jollity tends to being a bit bucolic, too, you see. Fosters ideas which men find comforting, progressive, promoting order. Jupiter deals with wealth. Whoever has Jupiter strongly placed in the map will, whether he or she likes it or not, will always have money pouring in. Wealth, not merely money, but resources of any sort, whatever they are. Jupiter is a maker, a spender, lavish, generous, and hospitable. Jupiter can be extravagant too. spends too lavishly, gives away too generously. Authority which goes with resources, with wealth, that's Jupiterian. Jupiter allows a few fair lapses. You know the number of heroes and godmen who came out of Zeus and various Greek ladies. As accepted by people, allowed in society, sort of thing. You see? Not super moral. Not too moralistic, yes, I've got that here. Jupiter deals with formal religion, the institutionalized religion, not with anything transcendent. Jupiter has nothing to do with mysticism as such. Jupiter is worldly in the best sense of the word, worldly. A university and scholarship, not genius. Saturn is a perfectionist, enduring. Saturn governs Capricorn and Aquarius. He's enduring. He also inflicts pain. Being a perfectionist, he's like a sculptor who chisels off without thinking whether he's causing any pain to the substance which he's chiseling. Chisels off until the perfect thing is released. See, that's Saturn. He's an idealist whose works are eventually truer to life. Final form in declining years. If you have Saturn powerfully placed in your horoscope towards the end of your life, gradually you'll see the fruits coming, and they will be concerned with perfection. That's Saturn. Refined, very austere, superior knowledge, foresight with regard to the known, self-controlled, inspiring awe and fear. Jupiter, although the king of the gods, doesn't inspire awe and fear like Saturn does. Individual, solitary, serious, strict with himself and restrictive in relation to others. A very strict disciplinarian, not necessarily a harsh disciplinarian. If there is a bad aspect of Mars and Saturn together in relation, in the horoscope, then you can get the harsh disciplinarian. But otherwise, he's a strict disciplinarian, just quietly insists. Saturn is slow. He brings everything to fruition, knowing the ripeness of time is there or there, and everything at its right time. No hurrying about it. That brings everything to perfection. Saturn is a really wonderful planet, although it is regarded as a malefic. It's regarded as a malefic because all this involves pain and sacrifice on the part of the individual. Sacrifice in the ordinary sense of the term, sacrifice. Self-mastery. Mars gives mastery over others. Mars dominates others. But Saturn is concerned with mastering himself. Completely self-controlled. And that is why Saturn's influence is the most repressive, self-repressive influence on one. You see? Very mental planet. Knowledge of fundamentals, objective and scientific. Very wise man of the world, Saturn is. He says, don't do that, don't do this. See, my father was a Capricornian, ruler, ruled by Saturn. But he also had an extraordinary Jupiterian and Venusian influence, absolute kindness and love, you see. And he was a very wise man, otherwise he knew, son, if you do that, it'll go wrong. Ultimate good through sorrow and trouble. He is the transmuter of dukkha into nirvana.